Our topic this week is hope, and my conversation partners are Dr. Dave Thomas and Dr. Carl Kosart, both colleagues of mine in the School of Theology. Thank you both for joining me today.
Glad to do it.
Ephesians chapter 2, verse 12 suggests that there are some who live without hope. Now, is that even possible? Can a person live without some kind of hope?
Well, it's interesting. The famous Greek philosopher Aristotle has an answer for you. And here's what he would say. Speaking to the elderly, he says, "They live by memory rather than by hope, for what is left to them of life is but little compared to the long past." So he implies that hope diminishes with age. They have little to look forward to anymore. So that would be his answer. Now, I would disagree with him, but many people do feel that.
So that means I would be more hopeful than you, then,
by
Carl,
a few months.
Because I'm just a little bit younger. Okay.
Yeah, I noticed you didn't bring me in there.
I left. That would be too painful, maybe. So.
You know, I think this is, the comment you read there, Carl, makes me want to proclaim the good news.
Yes.
That this life is not all there is as far as the Christian faith is concerned. You know, that whatever we live here is, in a sense, a veil of tears in anticipation of something much greater. And so I find it for Christians, aging does not need to be a walk into hopelessness.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a growth into the understanding that I don't have much time left on this earth, but my anticipation is that I will be able to step over into the next one. And I like, there are several old people I know who have seen life this way, is that they are aging, but they're aging in the sense that they are leaving this earth and progressing toward the kingdom, and for them the death will be simply a brief hiatus before the great joy of the future. And see, you talk about, can you live without hope? You can exist without hope. But people who surrender hope become despondent and they do desperate things.
Yeah, I think of our own circumstance of losing our daughter, oldest daughter, a few years ago. In my perspective, the death of hope would be worse than the death of the flesh.
Oh, that's so true, Carl.
Because I still have hope, and that hope is what keeps me going. That this is not all there is.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, hope is. Yeah. Everything.
I had an uncle who lost a child at age 4, and I saw the great sorrow of that, but it was always mixed with a great hope. I have never heard anybody who could preach on the second coming like he could, because he knew on that day his little girl would be restored to him. And, I mean, he never finished the sermon. He would always break down in tears, but to see his sorrow infused with hope, oh my, money can't buy that.
It's interesting to me that about a century ago or so, many or most of those living in the so-called Western world were very optimistic about the advancements of knowledge and everything's going to kind of be solved and we're going to build a kind of utopia here on Earth.
Build a ship that cannot be sunk even.
Yeah. And then you look around today and I think those hopes have been dashed, certainly. And without the blessed hope, the hope of ultimate restoration with Christ, I think we are to be pitied. Very, very pitied.
You know, I think it's probably helpful, though, if, you know, on this subject, we actually talk about what hope means, because I think there's different definitions to hope. And, I mean, I know that today people use a phrase, perhaps even some of our students in our classes might, you know, hoping against hope, you know, they're hoping for an A.
Right.
Yeah, that's desperation.
You know?
I just don't think that is the way the word hope is used in the Bible. Hope is not a wishful thinking, you know, a shot in the dark. It is a confident expectation that because of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, that we know that all we see here is not all there is, but there is something greater to come.
Yeah, and you caused me to think that the thing that is most hopeful in this world is the promise of a reliable person. You know, I count more on that than on a piece of paper or anything. If I know you, gentlemen, to be honest, and you can look me in the face and say, "Dave, I will do that," I have more hope and confidence in that being achieved than somebody who said, "Oh, yeah, I'll sign the contract."
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. And when I put this in the context of for example, Jesus' return, to me the greatest reason I cling to that is his promise that I'm going away, but I'm going to come again. And here's somebody who has already invested life to the point of death in the human experiment, and now he says, I'm leaving, but I'm going to come again. Mm-hmm. Well, I can wait for that.
Yeah.
I can wait for that.
Wait expectantly with confidence.
And even if it doesn't happen exactly the way I think it should or when it should, it doesn't cause me one moment of discouragement. I'm waiting for that day.
Yeah. Hmm. What factors tend to rob us of our hope? We've talked about how important it is to hope.
Hope killers, I guess you'd say.
Hope, what are the hope killers?
Well, I think cynicism is one. Mm. You know, I learned a long time ago that doubt has an unlimited number of children. And that if you start doubting, if that doubt produces offspring, and you can always find 25 places to hang your doubts. But doubts, you know, they turn to cynicism, and then you don't only become cynicism about one thing, you become cynical about everything, and then you descend into despondency of some kind. Nobody's going to have 100% proof of anything.
Mm-hmm.
So confidence, I think, is a great thing. Build that, and hope builds that. Not to the point of some optimistic foolishness, you know. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a confidence that rests in the best kind of evidence you can find.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Any other hope killers? Or
I would just think maybe perhaps discouragement
struggle.
In relationships, perhaps, or struggles where someone lets us down. Then we feel burned, and that causes us to lose hope of others. It's hard to trust people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And suffering can be really hard on hope sometimes. Mm-hmm. Prolonged suffering, I mean.
Yes.
This is the third lesson in the quarter. And so far we've talked about love and faith, and now we come to hope. How are these three concepts related? Is there a connection between them? What's the difference between faith and hope? I could keep throwing out questions, kind of a general thing here. But at the end of 1 Corinthians 13, these three are spoken of. These three remain. Faith, hope, and love, as if somehow there is a relationship between them.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Paul does quote those in order, and it makes me think that, I mean, there's significance there, but it's not just there. It's not like he just got wound up, you know, and just was in the moment, and these just nicely rolled off his tongue, but he actually mentions these, for example, at the beginning of his letter to the Thessalonians, 1 Thessalonians. He talks about their faith, their hope, and their love. These seem to be the fundamental ingredients, I guess we could say, of the Christian life. That's the pillars. That's the foundation on which the others build and grow.
So they are connected, not very just in so. This one place, but very, yes. Very much so. Can one of these exist in our lives without the others being present? Can I just love? Can I just hope? Can I just have faith? Or do they have to go together somehow?
See, I don't really think they're the ingredients. I also think they're the product. To some extent. In other words, that I see these as plants, that if you plant the seed and they start growing, they start producing after their own kind. So I don't know how to answer your question.
Petals, are they petals on a flower kind of?
Well, I would agree with what Dave just said, maybe. Because, you know, in our last discussion, I said faith is always a response. And I think that would go for hope and love as well.
Yeah.
They're never something that we generate. It's a response to what God does in our life.
Very good. Yeah, very good. We've talked about hope and the hope of the soon return of Jesus. Let's think for just a minute about that reality and move our thoughts from our position here, a position of hope, but the final realization of that hope. We'll talk about heaven. It's interesting to me that often in the Bible when we read descriptions of heaven, whether it's in Revelation 21 or we could look at Isaiah 65, talking about that great and glorious time of restoration, that heaven's often described in negative terms. In other words, we have a description of what will not be there.
Mm-hmm.
This won't be, that won't be, and so forth. What are the things that you are most grateful for? Will not be in heaven? What are you glad won't be there? And then if you want to talk about what you're glad will be there, you can do that too.
I would say for me it's very clear. I'm glad that death will not be there. Losing a daughter after seeing grandparents pass away, seeing the suffering we have on this planet, lives cut short, I am grateful that it will be the death of death.
Yeah, for me, when I think of that question, Paul, I put it even in a bigger perspective, Carl, if you forgive me for saying it that way. The evil will not be there. Evil will not be there. When I see what evil has done, it's caused wars and sickness and death and sorrow and inhuman activity and brokenness. And, you know, when you tell me that evil will not be there, my first reaction is, well, I would like to be there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I want to go where evil is absent.
Yes.
I've had enough. And, you know, as somebody who's been in ministry for a long time, I learned a long time ago, and it was very helpful to understand that my whole job is built on the brokenness. The necessity of my job is built on the brokenness of life. We won't need people like me. We won't need doctors and nurses in heaven, because you won't need policemen, because all of us deal with the brokenness of life.
Yes.
It's a result of evil. When evil is missing, that's going to really be heaven.
Yes. I think that's the point. I would agree with you 100%, because even Paul says in Romans 5, chapter 5, verse 12, that sin came into the world bringing death with it.
Yes.
So the ultimate removal of sin is the removal of death and all the tragic consequences.
But I understand why you put death first. Your family's been touched by death. Mine has not. And I've sat by the side of people who've experienced death, and I know that death is an unspeakably ugly thing.
Mm.
But it's here and consequent to evil. So.
We talk sometimes, and I understand why people do this, and I certainly don't fault them for it, but it seems more and more that funerals, we try to cast them in very positive light. Mm. We talk about it's a celebration and so forth. And certainly there's a sense in which that's true. As we gather together, we can remember and celebrate a life well lived and rejoice over the time that we've had with someone. But I think we can carry that too far.
Yeah.
The Bible speaks of death as an enemy, which will one day be defeated.
Yes, sir.
That's what we celebrate, I think. What we should celebrate.
But the wonderful thing about the scriptures is that we can sorrow, but not without hope. And to mix those two emotions or feelings is a very interesting, in some ways strange, but very powerful thing. Sorrow, but not without hope. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Wonderful to think about the hope, the blessed hope of Christ's return.
Yes.
May God be with us as we wait expectantly with confidence for that day. Thank you, Dave and Carl, for your willingness to share. Thanks also to Josiah Hackerott, our program engineer. And finally, thank you for listening in. I hope you'll join us next week. For The Good Word, I'm Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.
Which is more important to you, your physical life, your social life, or your spiritual life?